Tracy by giving you something here to start with on Christian Science. This is what they start with every time they meet. They turn to one passage in Science and Health. It's on, 468. So this is their what's called their scientific statement of being. There is no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material, he is spiritual. Well, that sounds really good, doesn't it? I mean, it's very positive. Let me read you a real quick story, and we can slop this over till next time if we need to, too. Yeah. But that's what sounds good, right? That was the appeal of Christian Science, because, you know, you can control it, and you can get healed, and all these things, right? How powerful our minds are. Here's a story that is the reality, I think, unfortunately. I got this off line. This is a person who used to be a Christian Science follower. When I was in my early 20s, I learned from firsthand experience the failings of Christian Science in the face of death. My grandmother became very ill. For months, she sought healing in Christian Science, but as she continued to weaken, she turned to the medical profession in a desperate effort to save her life. This was a shock to me. All my life, my grandmother had instilled in me an inherent distrust of doctors. Yet, faced with the prospect of death and unable to find any healing on her own, she abandoned the teachings of Mary Baker Eddy and put her trust in the medical profession. Unfortunately, her condition was so severe, by the time she went to the doctors, they could not save her. My grandfather and I sat at her bedside for 2 days while she died. Grandma Marie regained consciousness on several occasions during those 2 days. During these times, I spoke to her, looked into her eyes, and sought some comfort or source of strength to deal with her death. But all I saw was death and despair. She was dying, she was scared, she didn't know what was going to happen to her, and I had no idea what to say to comfort her. I've never experienced such hopelessness as I experienced in that hospital room. My grandmother expressed to me her fear of death. She sought desperately to cling to life, but I didn't know of anything I could say or do to offer her hope in the face of her imminent death. Our local Christian Science church offered no comfort whatsoever. In fact, not one person from the church ever visited us in the hospital. They told me later they didn't want their thoughts to interfere with her healing. But I recognized this was just another sign of the reluctance of church members to face the reality of death. My grandfather sat in the hospital room with me and quoted from Mrs. Eddy, claiming my grandmother was not seriously ill. She would get up and walk out of the hospital any minute. His heart was not in it. Nobody could listen to my grandmother's increasingly labored breathing and not recognize that she would soon be dead. So there's the reality of Christian Science. So I hope we didn't shortchange you too much, Tracy, but Tracy did some research on this belief.
Yeah. About 11 months ago, I went out on a bicycle ride and came home and just started feeling horrible. I could barely stand. I was sweating profusely, probably partly from the bike ride, but not that much. And I felt like somebody had whacked the inside of my elbow with a baseball bat. And I told my wife, why don't you take me into the ER? Not quite sure, but I don't feel like a hypochondriac. Got wheeled in, did an EKG, sure enough, yep, this is what we don't want to see, but you're in the right place. Called the catheterization team, and had a full-blown heart attack.
Wow.
So spent, got all expense paid trip by the insurance company, thankfully, for 3 days in cardiac ICU. And had I realized, Christian Science said the sick are not healed merely by declaring there is no sickness, but by knowing there is none. If I'd simply known there is no sickness, I could have just gotten up, walked away, no problem. But like Gary says, it just, does this with reality. So it's a little bit of background. As you may have seen from the handout that Gary had, some of the spiritual trends of the day of Mary Baker Eddy, the woman who founded it. She was born in 1821 in New Hampshire. And the big spiritual trends were Hinduism, Transcendentalism, Mesmerism, which has since become known as hypnotism, the thought of you could, under hypnosis, unlock portions of your mind that you haven't been able to access before. And come up with new abilities as a result of it. Occult metaphysics, seances, and other mental healing. So, Mary Baker Eddy was first married in 1843, and her husband died of yellow fever 7 months later. She remarried in 1853. Her father had advised against it, knowing mentally she was not real stable, and she went ahead with it anyway, and was divorced some years later. Third marriage to Asa Eddy happened when she was 56, and he later died of a coronary thrombosis, but she contested the autopsy and had a Dr. Eastman agree with her assessment of his death, which was, in a letter to the Boston Post in 1882, that some of her former students had mentally poisoned her husband with malicious mesmerism in the form of arsenic mentally administered. And you know, as a result, because Dr. Eastman agreed with this, he was investigated, found out that his organization was running a virtual abortion mill, and he had no medical credentials, and he was sentenced to 10 years in prison. And so, you know, things got off to just a wonderful start. So, eventually, Eddy met a man named Phineas Parkhurst Quimby in Portland, Maine, and he had developed a system of mental healing called the Science of Man, also called the Science of Christ, the Science of Health, and Christian Science. And at least Eddy waited around until he had died before plagiarizing a lot of his work and calling it her own, and also plagiarized a lot from Francis Lieber, who was a student who had researched Hegel, George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, whose philosophy centered around what's called absolute idealism, meaning you know, the explanation of thought versus react versus matter, and she then wrote this book of science and health with key to the scriptures that plagiarized a lot from each of them. So she, however, claimed that she discovered Christian Science after a doctor had given her 3 days to live after hurting her back falling on a sidewalk. And she says, on the third day, she read Matthew 9:2, which is an account of Jesus healing a paralytic, and immediately rose up from her bed, completely healed. Of course, the physician that attended her completely refutes the story, saying, no, she was not in dire straits, as she claims. Big surprise. So her philosophy centered around denial of the material world. Does that sound familiar with other philosophies that we looked at that brings a bell there? Like Gnosticism, you know, the physical world doesn't exist, it's all in your mind. However, she seemed to live pretty well within this reality that didn't exist. She had lots of nice, non-existent amenities. In 1881, she opened the Massachusetts Metaphysical College and allegedly taught some 4,000 students over 8 years for $300 each, which was a lot of money back then. The course never lasted the length of a college half semester and was taught by staff who weren't even qualified to teach ninth grade. In 1897, she had commanded, after she'd written her book in 1885, and had gotten a few followers together, quite a few actually, and she commanded in 1897 that No one be taught Christian Science for 1 year. Instead, church members should sell as many copies of Science and Health and of her other works as possible, being the only proper instructors for this hour. One of the big fears that she had tried to play up was what was also known as animal magnetism. That was another term for hypnotism. That was a huge fear that somebody could mentally control you, either asleep or awake, without you being a willing subject. So she played that up big time. Church members who did not go out and sell her books faithfully were threatened with being tossed out of the church. Sell my books, or you're gone. In 1908, she instructed church members to buy a new edition of her book because of new information of great importance. So for $3, the new edition contained the following new information. Christian Science scientists, be a law to yourselves that mental malpractice can harm you neither when asleep nor when awake. That was it. In December, around the holiday season of 1899, she had written this in the Christian Science Journal. Beloved, I ask this favor of all Christ scientists. Do not give me on, before, or after the forthcoming holiday off material except 3 tea jackets. All may contribute to these. And then she goes on to describe these tea jackets made of silk or satin, 2 for utilitarian purposes and 1 for kind of Sunday best. But the key there was all may contribute to these. It wasn't that she was looking for 200,000 followers to give her these things, but to contribute. And it became known as the tea jacket swindle, which just so happened to coincide after her financial reserves were depleted following being sued by a former member for slander. So, bank account gets low, so what can we come up with? Contribute for my very simple, non-existent material needs. Some of the doctrines, as I mentioned, were the fact that all is about the mind, that matter does not exist. She claims that the Bible was her inspiration, that she used no other authority. And yet, the doctrines that she espoused are just 180 degrees out. I had pulled a few of these out of real great textbook, Kingdom of the Cults, and passed this along to Gary, so
I'll send it out to you guys.
But here are just a couple of the highlights, like the doctrine of the Trinity and the deity of Christ. So the theory of 3 persons in 1 God, that is a personal trinity or triunity, suggests polytheism rather than one ever-present I Am. The Christian who believes in the first commandment is a monotheist. Thus, he virtually unites with the Jews' belief in one God and recognizes that Jesus Christ is not God, as Jesus himself declared, but is the Son of God. The spiritual Christ was infallible. Jesus, as material man, was not Christ. To her, the Trinity was life, truth, and love as concepts, not a personal God. On the virgin birth of Christ, God is indivisible. A portion of God could not enter man, neither could God's fullness be reflected by a single man. Else God would be manifestly finite, lose the deific character, and become less than God. Jesus, the Galilean prophet, was born of the Virgin Mary's spiritual thoughts of life and its manifestations. On the atonement of Christ, the material blood of Jesus was no more efficacious to cleanse from sin when it was shed upon the accursed tree than when it was flowing in his veins as he went daily about his father's business. The real atonement, so infinitely beyond the heathen conception that God requires human blood to propitiate his justice and bring mercy, needs to be understood. On the ascension of Christ, until he himself ascended, or in other words, rose even higher in the understanding of spirit, God, Jesus' unchanged physical condition after what seemed to be death, was followed by his exaltation above all material conditions, and this exaltation explained his ascension. And his final demonstration, called the ascension, which closed the earthly record of Jesus, he rose above the physical knowledge of his disciples, and the material senses saw him no more. So he didn't ascend into heaven, he just disappeared from what the senses could see. So, it's just...
She must have met L. Ron Hubbard, huh?
She was just as good at raising funds.
Yeah.
More recently, that was a good illustration of where the faith in that worldview leads to. Just nothing but emptiness and despair at the end. Over the years, members have been brought to trial for charges ranging from murder, manslaughter, to child abuse. Trial in Minnesota, including $14 million in damages for choosing prayer over medical treatment. It was later reduced down to $1.5 million. The current view of the Bible, along with science and healing, humanity had the Bible for close to 2 millennia without fully understanding how to use its truths in a scientifically provable way to heal and regenerate people like Christ Jesus did. To arrive at that kind of understanding, humanity needed to comprehend the Bible on a deeper level. They needed to unlock the Bible, so to speak. It was the specific mission of science and health to give the world this key to the scriptures, to open up their treasures and enable everyone to use them. So, here we have the Bible for 2,000 years. No one knew how to properly interpret it until Mary Baker Eddy came along to show you how. And they still keep that book elevated with the same authority as the Bible. You've probably heard of the Christian Science Monitor. Very well respected as a news organization, but not so good as a business. They haven't been profitable since 1961, and their losses have been as high as $250 million. There's a TV venture they tried between 86 and the middle of 92, which lost $235 million. In that same year, they borrowed $40 million from the pension fund just to keep the church solvent. Their subscriptions back in 97 were only about 73,000. But, even though groups like Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons do much better financially, they're also having a heyday in a lot of third world countries. The base of Christian scientists still is primarily North America, more Northern Europe, and more westernized regions and peoples of other countries. So it seems to have an appeal primarily to a Western mindset.
Tracy, we better knock off here in a second.
Yeah.
Okay, I know you got a lot of stuff, I'm sorry.
Kind of goes over the highlights of it. Like I said, Gary will pass along something else that explains some of their doctrines in a little greater detail. Anyone have any questions?
Yeah. Perhaps I'm being overcritical, but it seems like people who follow that religion would follow Cliff Wilson's church and what's happening now.
Yeah. let me toss that back out. What do you think the appeal would be? Why would someone fall for something like that? I mean, there's got to be a reason, because there are thousands that have. You can't just, it's not likely that they all belong in the same asylum. Maybe they do. I think it, like many cults, appeals to the ego. We have secret knowledge. And why don't you be part of the in crowd with us? We'll give you that secret knowledge. And then you think, wow, I'll know stuff that other people don't know. That's the only kind of thing I can think of that would be an appeal. Yeah.
Sounds a lot like Scientology to me.
Yeah, it does. I think a lot of the same motivations and equally crazy.
I read somewhere that Christian Science has become kind of the godfather for this whole name it and claim it and what's it called, word faith movement, where you know the word has power all by itself and you can make things happen because of your determination and all. So we see it still around us, even though Christian Science has not prospered. They had many more people at one time. I forgot what the statistics, but it's really shrunk.
Yeah, they had back in
it was over a million,
they
right?
They had about 2,200 churches in 97 by 2002. Accounts vary from 2,000 to fewer than 1,900 congregations.
Yeah.
So they're definitely on the decline. They won't release membership numbers, and so estimates vary to about 150,000 at the bottom end, up as high as 400,000, but still far cry from seven figures.
They've been sued enough that now they're kind of trying to cut back on this idea of medical healing as bad, and so they're now kind of quieting that down because they can see where they're heading, you know, with this kind of attitude and with the lawsuits and stuff. So it's just a shame to see this happen out there. But